Welcome to the Tearaway Podcast, the podcast that has everything you need. It will uplift, inspire, intrigue, and interest you. I don't get paid enough to say this shit. So, listen or not, that's up to you, really. But if you're gonna listen to a podcast anyway, might as well be this. Don't hold your breath now, because here they are, whether you like it or not, Dino. Or maybe Doris and Dino. Either way, enjoy or not.
Hello and welcome to Tearaway Podcast. My name's Dean Williams. I'm your host. And with me today, I've got a cracker of a guest. I've just had 5 days away in Italy with him. Supposed to have done this podcast in the house, but we never got time. So what we're going to do is we're going to do the podcast now. He's in Grimsby. I'm in Chichester. Here he is. The poet, Matty McCourt.
Oi, oi. All right.
How you doing, Matty?
All right, brother. Yourself?
Yes, good, mate. What are you, 54 years of age?
54, mate, yeah, I'm an old man now, granddad.
We grew up on Nunsop / Bradley Park Estate in Grimsby.
Yeah.
You was on the Nunny, I was on the Bradley. We went to Crosby School, didn't we?
That's right, mate, yeah.
You used to get beaten up by Shelley Woodford.
Yeah.
You weren't so hard then. I don't think anyone was. She wanted to play football. You give her a fucking ball. She played football.
Fucking mate.
You fucking bags you go on her side. That's how it used to be. So what was it like growing up as Matty McCourt, as a young kid, 5 years old? Did you have mum and dad?
No, just had my mum, just me and my mum.
Yeah, I was
dad,
saying.
Dad was away, my dad was like a Glasgow guy. He went back to Glasgow, I think it was about 18 months. But my dad was my dad, he's like to travel, he was short-lived marriage. So we moved on to Nunsop, I was about 3 years old, I think I was. And my mum was from Cleethorpes originally, all their family from the Cleethorpes area. You move on to a council estate, which is close-knit, very, very close-knit.
Yeah.
Families and families, and one family's in one street and the next family's in the next street, they're all related. It was a bit rough. I know I've got some memories, some bad memories as a kid. Yeah, when my mum had a couple of boyfriends, but what, she was engaged to one lad, he was another Glasgow guy, George, and he absolutely just fucking battered me, mum. Smashed the house and fucking, I mean, when I say battered, well, like, smashed her into a wall. And no kid should have to witness this. No kid should have to witness any of this. Kicks in the stomach, still took out boots, yeah, to the point where I thought she was going to die. Well, I remember one time, they're coming from the Nunsop Tavern, that was a pub they used, and he was filling my mum in. He was beating her up. He was from Castlemilk in Glasgow. He was smashing her into the wall, smashing her in. She's fighting back and whatever, nails and that. So I rang the police, the old nine.
5 minutes to do 3 9s.
Exactly, yeah. So the police turned up, and I remember even like now, I was like getting on a bit, but I still remember the police wanted to arrest my mum because they couldn't see no injuries to my mum, but he's been smashing her into the wall.
Yeah.
But she's fought back and clawed his face.
Yeah.
So they calmed down. There was a lot of police there. It's weird, I can remember certain things. So the police left, sure enough, about 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, he's repeated himself. He's filling my mum in, banging her in the wall. So I'm on the police again, and the police come and the friends set me into care and stuff like that. But I never got my head around that, like, I was going to arrest my mum and not him. Whereas nowadays, you know, if you fart in the wrong wind direction, the bloke gets arrested.
Yeah.
Which it was some horrible things. Like I say, you see, you got beat up.
What happened with your mum and dad? Why didn't they stay together?
I think my dad was like, the wonder he likes to travel. I mean, my dad was 30 years old. My mum was 18 when they met. So he's also had some history, some past.
Yeah.
I mean, dad's passed away now, but after he passed away, I found I've got brothers and sisters like Australia, Cardiff, and Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
But like my family in Glasgow say, the only one they ever met was me, so they obviously thought I was special to him.
Mm.
I spoke to the family, the brother and sister in Perth. I've tried to find the one in Middlesbrough, and I spent quite a lot of money trying to find the one in Cardiff, but I never found them, but it is what it is.
Was your dad still in your life all the time you were separated from your dad, or was your dad a traveller and he was away?
No. He was like, I've got memories from about 3 years old, or maybe four, and then I didn't see him for a couple of years, and then I remember my mum saying one morning, do you want to see your dad? I was 8 years old. I remember dead well, I was 8 years old. I was like, okay. He turned up. I went to school that morning, and I run all the way home from school. And I was running home. There was a family across the road from me in Crosby Road called the Whirtleys.
Jamie and Margaret. And Lee,
Jamie and Sean, yeah.
Yeah.
And the mum and dad used to call me the fourth son. A lot of bad people around Nunsop. It was bad to me. I wouldn't say bad, but there was bullies to my mum, because my mum was an only single mother.
Yeah.
whereas now it's accepted to be a single mother, but back then it was. So they was coming to focus on to Margaret. He said, I remember saying to me, remember dead well, what are you going to own for? Because my dad's deal, I didn't see him for like now, X amount of years, and he bought me a train set and some cars. So then he was back in my life from about 8 till I was about 12. When I say back in my life, he used to come to Grimsby.
Where was he living then?
He was like there, living in wherever, Glasgow, wherever he lived. He was a proper, well, I'm the kind of guy who will never settle down.
Yeah.
He was, my dad would go under it, you know, and where I lay my hat, that's my home, and women. And he was a singer, he was a dancer, he was a scrapper, he could play the mouth organ, entertainer. So life and soul of the party. He was what he was. But like, still my dad, still love him. My dad was like a proper Glaswegian hard case. So when I was a young kid, I was very young, about 5 years old. He turned up out of the blue one night, and there was a guy there, and he was a Glaswegian. I'm not a thing for Glaswegian. So my dad battered him, whatever, right? But a little 5-year-old boy, by the way, witnessing this. So my dad's battered him, he's gone away. So like that, later on that night, 3 cars turned up. Right? I remember dead well. This ain't remember well. One of them was a Mini. I don't know if you remember the Minis in the 70s, you had the double back doors.
Yeah.
On the back. So guys turned him, was about, I don't know, say, I thought it was a Mini, but 89 blokes. So my dad's on the straightener with this guy. Now, your 5-year-old boy witnesses on your front of your garden. So every time my dad was getting the better, these guys were stepping in and was lifting my dad off.
Yeah.
Now, this is getting back to the Whirtleys as well. So across the road, Mally Whirtley, that was Lee and Sean Jamie's dad, he come out and he's like, my dad had a nickname called Sambo. And the reason my dad's nickname was Sambo is because he works a lot in Africa. And so he had a tan. So I was like, back then it was called Sambo.
I don't think we can say that nowadays.
No.
It's a racial slur.
It is a racial slur, but it wasn't a racial slur to my dad because he was always
just a nickname.
Tan because he works in Africa a lot. So he's come out, and I remember getting a tennis ball. I mean, a 5-year-old boy went in a fight on your grass, and I threw a tennis ball at one of these blokes. I used to tear my lips like a bag. This is like laughing because a young kid. I run upstairs and hid in the cupboard in the bedroom. And then obviously my dad's, I don't know what happened in the fight, but obviously my dad's won it. They've cleared off and my dad's come in and he's washing the blood off his hands. And I remember being in the bathroom in the house of nuns for it, stood inside the sink, but I look at my dad washing his hands and he'd just done the baseball.
When you was at school, was you affected by all of it as well? Did it come out when you was at Crosby?
Yeah, so like you don't see it as a kid. I was always in trouble at school. Now, as you get older, you look back and you think, well, of course you're going to be in trouble because your mum would come in. Be like your boyfriend, they've been fighting. You'd be waking until 2 or 3 in the morning, watching your mum get beat up. I mean, that time when he kicked her in the stomach with a steel toe cap boots on. So to see that, like, see, you think mum's going to die, she collapsed on the floor, then you've got to go to school. So your head's going to be fucked, isn't it?
Mm.
Your head's going to be fucked. So obviously, getting into trouble at school because you've had no sleep, you've seen your mum get beat up. Like I said earlier on, if you fight in the wrong direction, well, you've got social services involved.
Yeah.
Back then, you never had that. So, like, all it was back then was like, I was a wrong one.
Yeah.
You know, lack of sleep. Everybody with lack of sleep, I don't care who you are. If you've got lack of sleep, everybody's a wrong one. When you're driving in your car, feeling kind of low, need a little pick me up to put you in the flow. Turn it in, turn it up, let the music take control. Gonna make you dance, gonna make you lose control. You are listening to Maddie McCourt's Top 10 at 10. Do you know the year? Like, fuck, neither do I. Here's the next part. Enjoy. The best of the 80s. Now on your favourite radio.
When you went to Chelly, did you take a lot of friends with you?
Yeah. Crosby School and Nunsport, we went to Chelly. And I was like, you always have like your top boys in the school. And then when you get to the senior school, it's like, right, you're like getting your pecking order.
Yeah. Because you got other schools that come in as well, don't you?
Yeah. So I was like, I just said, I was an only child, never had a big family. So as you go into Chelly School, you've got like, he's looked after because his sister's there, they looked after his brothers and sisters. You're in there, you're going from a top boy, like Crosby School to Chelly. Like, but what happened was, 2 weeks of being in Chelmsford, there was a fight on Crosby School pictures with Tony Acklam and I think it was Eddie Musselm. Eddie Musselm's year older than us. Now, Eddie Musselm, Tony Acklam bottled the fight. So they all come up to me and went, will you fight Eddie Musselm? So, like, as a kid, you go, yeah, okay.
I'll take it.
As a kid, you go, okay. So, and people laugh, people from Chelly School will laugh if they see his podcast, well, they'll see his podcast. They'll laugh at his story. Because I still get hammered about it now. So I went, okay, I'll have a fight with him. So there's a fight, and he does me. Like, beats me, gets me on the floor, but he boots me in the eye. Like, boots me in the eye, and then he lost my eye. We had a pair of monkey boots on. Remember the monkey boots?
Yeah. Brown like, ones.
The team raised the Doc Martens, when he's coming for Doc Martens, you had monkey boots. So my eye's out, he shut my eye. So of course, now, I'm going to school, my fucking eye out here is shut. I was like, who's that kid? And everybody got to tell me. But at the same time, when that happened, the film that was out was Rocky III. So the song was Eye of the Tiger.
Israel!
When you went to New Club Disco or a community centre disco, like community centre was like Grange on Lunchbox.
None of
then I'll be seeing, I tagged them, they'll be in Facebook and I had a sign because the eye was shut and they lost my sign. And that was that. And the funny thing was, Eddie Muscle was a Mormon. No, he was Jehovah's Witness. Jehovah's Witness. So when I wanted to have a straightener, a couple of weeks later, I'll have a rematch. His parents coming to school and we don't believe in violence. So then my mum went to school and fucking don't believe in violence. Nearly blinded me son. They don't believe in violence. So anyway, getting back to the black guy, that's why I've become quite well known in Chelmsford School in the first couple of weeks of being there.
Did you start doing martial arts because you wanted not to get your head stoved in again?
Martial arts come on, it was 1977 with the Queen's Jubilee.
77,
the house down the street was like, they had a video recorder, which was like, fuck me, 1977, I had a video recorder, was like, the only grail. So the guy said, you had to pay like, I don't know, say 20 pence to watch Enter the Dragon. Watched that, I was like, wow. Fucking like, wow. You're like, obviously, everyone knew we was late, but like, around our town, like, it was hard to get to places like, I had to go to judo, I was about 12 years old, at the Greensboro Leisure Centre for about 6 weeks. I couldn't afford to carry on, but my mum couldn't afford to carry on making the payments.
Yeah.
So what happened, I dabbled with boxing, obviously, everybody dabbled boxing. My first pair of boxing was about 10 years old. And then, when I got to 15, a martial arts club opened in Grimsby. It was the NASSKC. Now, the NASSKC was a Northern All-Style Sports Karate Club. My instructor was from Sheffield called Paul Bradshaw. And the branch was a branch of the AMAA. I always did swimming, but once I took up karate at 15, gone. I used to train every day. Every day, loved it. Every day. I'd see like things on it, like an arcade game, which like the up kick, a roundhouse kick.
Roundhouse kick, yeah.
I'd just try and emulate it. I was absolutely obsessed with it. Because up to them, martial arts, we did Wadaroo, and it was freestyle Wadaroo. So, but up to them, like, if he wants to do Shotokan, or karate, so to say, it was very traditional, whereas like the Wadaroo we did was like freestyle, so it was more towards Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Which is more towards like your idol, Bruce Lee.
No, Hong Kong Fu, isn't it?
Yeah, and the reason I could keep up training and keep on training is because as a young lad, I used to be a bit of a shoplifter. So all my money I used to earn, I could pay for like my new karate, so pay for my training lessons, stuff like that. Because before, like I say, with the judo, my mum couldn't afford to pay for it.
Yeah.
But with karate, I pay for it because like I say, I used to in a dodgy penny, if you like.
Where did you go shoplifting? In McNamara's?
No.
Town?
My dad, no. No, do you know why? Because he's on your manor. He's on your estate.
Yeah.
So you don't tell me like, I mean, I've never been in a house in my life. I'd never do that. I've never pinched stuff at Pearson in my life. I know, like, people say you should be critical, but like, you see these companies with the shops, they've got multi-million pound offshore accounts and stuff like that. Like, it's different.
Different. So say if you was in a, I don't know, for argument's sake, an airport, just returning from, I don't know, argument's sake, just let's say Italy or something like that.
Italy.
You wouldn't think twice about nicking a bit of aftershave. That you're talking about that kind of thing in the 1970s, aren't you? Basically. Just for argument's sake.
You won't catch me doing that now, Dean.
Of course not. Fucking grown up, Matt. You're fucking grown up.
Can you smell me? You've got a smelly vision there.
Okay, let's go.
This is the Tearaway Podcast with special needs guest, author, poet, and writer, Maddie McCourt. I fucking love you, Maddie.
When you was growing up and you was going from the ages of like 5 to 15, so you'd gone from Crosby, then you was going into Chelmsford. Who was your influences between those ages? Because you kind of like go through puberty, then you through going into the new school, then you go into girlfriends. So you kind of like your influences aren't really your dad, because you said you'd stop seeing him around about 12.
One day. Like from the age of 14, from the age of 12, we never come down to Grimsby until I was 23. So I actually went to Glasgow on my own at 14. Just got to train on my own.
What, see your dad?
I used to work on. I used to have a milk mound on the age of 12. Me and Georgie Finn, God love him, one of the best mates. Cause I still send to his grave now. I worked on the docks as a barrow boy.
Yeah.
In the summer of the
year. I did that.
Which is like, yeah, remember that? Yeah.
Penguins.
£15 a week. So I'd do 6 weeks at school holidays on the pontoon every day, saving money, and then go see my family in Glasgow. Go see my dad. But he never come back to Grimsby until I was about 23. From the age of 12 till 23. If I look up to like lads, and I still like respect them now, and when I see them, I don't think that I can get how much I think of them. There's a lot of guys on the estate that wasn't bullies,
yeah,
but there was hard cases, and I respected them. So there's a lot of guys on the non-sport estate who was classed as hard, and fucking whatever, by them. But when I started doing karate from the age of 15, I was going to karate tournaments. I'm seeing guys 6'1", 2'3", 6", like rip the muscle on, and then move about with the finesse of a ballet dancer, but so fast and so powerful. Now I'm going back to the estate, and all these guys who I thought was hard don't mean fucking jack shit to me, because they ain't fucking hard, mate. I've seen hard men, and also not just hard men, but gentlemen with it.
Yeah.
You know, like how they project themselves and that. The last thing they wanted was violence. Not that I've been in the company when that was happening, but you could just get the manner of how they conducted themselves. It was like proper gentlemen, but like, so what I'm trying to say is, our karate tournament, off the mats, you could like be socialising with them, and they were so nice. But when you put them on a karate mat, it was like Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, just flick a switch and change.
And that was a great education for me. That was, and like, from the age of 15 to like, you don't have to fucking have tattoos on your face and smoke rollers and fucking give all that to be hard. You can still be a gentleman.
Yeah.
But that's just curious all the time. And so I was really impressed with all that. That was a really big learning curve for me, all that. Really big.
When did you leave home?
I had to leave town when I was about 19. I had to get out of town because the police was after me for some reason. The doorman, there was some doorman in town after me for another reason. And I had a fall out with my uncle. My uncle was like a builder. And he was a builder by trade. He was a bodybuilder. And I fell out. So I had to get out of town. So I went clear off to Devon. But I went to Holy Camp in Devon in a place called Seaton. And the place was called Warren's Holy Camp. So I went down there, stayed that way for a few weeks. I was supposed to go down there for the season, but the money was crap. Ended up coming back about 4 weeks later. And back then, bear in mind, I've had CCTV or anything.
Mm.
And I got back to mum's house it was a Monday night. And fuck me, sure enough, Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, CID banging on my mum's door. How the fuck they knew I was back in Grimsby? Well, like, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's all right now, because you got the technology, but back then was like, wow. And the first thing that was on about was something that happened to me with, how can I say it? I don't want to name this store, because it might want to sue me, but something happened to a store, electrical store. There was like a lot of stock went missing.
Is your mum still alive, Matty?
No, my mum passed away. I was 24. My mum's 24. My mum was 43. My mum passed away. She passed away cancer.
Did she?
And it, me fucking knee. No, if I'm gone for my invincible, because I was the karate so much box. I was working the door. I was up to no good. I was doing whatever I was doing. I was fucking invincible. I remember like back in the day, you a cassette player in your car, just play that. Coolio.
Gangster's Paradise. Gangster's
Paradise. Yeah, that's it, mate. He's playing all the time. I was a fucking liar. That's what I thought it was. My mum got cancer like the mice. I was like, yeah, fucking, it's only cancer. You get off that. Fucking invincible, mate. Fucking everybody around me is invincible.
Yeah.
And she didn't. And my wife got pregnant. I was married at the time. She got pregnant with my daughter. So that was Joe, yeah. And Brogan was born on November the 28th that year. And then she was born with a lump on her neck. It's a bit of a concern. Well, not a bit of a concern. It was a fucking concern. And then we go and see Joe, and obviously people weren't telling me about my mum being ill. Like, I knew she had cancer, but like, she's going to get through it. Mum's going to live, and my mum's going to live for fucking ever. And she died the following Monday, so my Brogan was born on the Monday. At least my mum got to old Brogan, and she chose her middle name. And then the following Monday, my mum died, December the 5th. And then what happened there was, all that year, I jacked in my job, I was fucking down. But you've got to bear in mind, and people would get me like this, all my life, it's just been me and my mum. So it's my best mate. I've not just lost my mum, lost my best mate. She was my alibi. She was this, she was that. Fuck him. So I jacked in my job. No, I didn't jack in my job. My daytime job, I lost it, but I was obviously working the door there back in them days in there. So that year was horrendous. So I was ill the following year, November the 28th. I got rushed into hospital. I burst ulcers, nearly died. I was in for a week, and then December the 5th, they said, we're going to do a life saving operation. You have to sign a waiver. I'm like, I'm going to fucking die here. Because it's just like a movie thing, isn't it? I've gone a year to the day Brogan was born.
Yeah.
And then a year to the day my mum passed away, I'm on a life-saving operation. I'm thinking, this is me, I'm on my way out.
But did you not think that because you were so ill, he was then possibly he was going to join your mum? That could have been some kind of comfort.
Yeah, exactly that, Dean. Exactly that. I thought that's exactly what I thought. And you know what's quite funny? When I got wrongly diagnosed, the doctor was called Kuma. But then the doctor who did a life-saving operation was called Kuma. And I see him about 4 months later. I was like, listen, I analyse you. So but when I was wrongly diagnosed, and I got diagnosed, and then also I could have sued him. I could have made fucking hundreds of thousands, whatever, and I didn't. So because all I was bothered about was being alive. I'm not interested in money now. All I'm interested in life, being alive, having a good time. And back then, I could have made hundreds of thousands, whatever, because wrongly diagnosed. But I was just glad to be alive and be there for my kids.
When your mum passed, and like obviously Brogan had just come into your life, and you was with Joe. Was your relationship with Joe kind of reflective of your upbringing with your mum, in the fact that you would hold tight what you was doing with Joe, hold tight the fact that you was going to be a father to Brogan?
When my mum died, I was so low, so low, fucking like real, like point of the lowest place I've been in my life. And Joe, even though me and Joe don't get on now, she got me through that.
Yeah,
she got me through that. And I'll say to anybody, like, she got me through it. She did, yeah.
And after Brogan, who came next of your kids?
Bridie, yeah.
And then after Bridie?
Well, me and Joe divorced. Like, I
thought you had three kids.
Yeah, with Joanne, I had three kids with Joanne, three daughters.
What was the third? Yeah, so Brogan Bridie.
When Malone was born, I was on bail for finding a match, and I was looking at 8 years inside. I got arrested on January 27th, 1990. I think it was like 9 of us. And when I went to Crown Court in the November, there was only me there. All those, like, whether the charge got dropped, somebody lived near a copper, somebody's grass, and all the rest of the fucking shit.
What was that then? Who was that with?
Carlisle, Board of City for him.
Carlisle?
Yeah.
So what was it, Grimsby versus Carlisle or Liverpool for Carlisle?
No, Grimsby versus Carlisle. And there's a story behind that. So, see, the night before, I've been to a shop in Grimsby called Jazz. The football, I used to wear this jacket, right? This jacket I used to wear. Now, if you looked at it from, say, 20 metres away, it was black. Man, looks like, bear in mind, never had CCTV then, or if you did, he wouldn't like how it was, is now.
Yeah.
So he's black. Now, he's got, like, say, I don't know, say, 8 meters away, he was blue. It was blue, right? Because it was blue. Then he's got, like, within 2 meters, this jacket was blue with light green checks. So it's ideal, isn't it? You go to a match, you have a fucking table. What's he wearing? A black coat. Yeah. You go to go, it's fucking blue. They go, he's wearing a blue coat. You go, but then we missed out the green checks. Next day, playing Carlisle. Fuck it, Carlisle, being there, buddy. I'll wear this coat. Don't matter, because nobody stand out on the ground, you know, like fucking strut your stuff.
Yeah.
Like Danny Dyer, bit of a walk and that. As you go into the ground, some lads, oh, fucking Carlisle's here, fucking, let's have it. Goes down the alleyway, he's ended up on there, I think he's born down here. It was like, I think it was, how much, 89 degrees, it's about 30 now, it's like a minibus full of them. So having his bricks again thrown and all the rest of it. Now, somebody got himself with a brick over the head with a brick. It wasn't me, right? I'll tell you now, happened to court for it, so I could. Fucking double jeopardy. I can tell you if it was me or not.
Yeah.
It was not me. But I got charged with it. And I remember that week in the cells, in Clee Thorpe cells, I was in the Clee Thorpe cell with Daz Pickard. And I smoked then, so I bought the fags in. So when he got out on Sunday night. So I'll bring you up. I dropped my Chinese off. I went, okay, mate. Because you do all that back then. I didn't think he would. He dropped me Chinese off. But not only did he drop me a Chinese off, but he put a lump of dope in the Chinese. So like, and like I said, smoking the cells there. Yeah. I was only selling my own, so obviously I could have a joint. So just after that, I got charged, and they said, a frame, this is room intent. Like, the fray, okay, yeah, I'll take the fray, because I was fired. This is room intent. I never hit anybody over the head with a brick. When I got put back in my cell, the copper, I don't want to fucking mention his name, it was fucking Dick, right? He said to me, we know you haven't done it, but you're the only one we can pin on.
Yeah.
That's the exact words. I remember it dead well. Fucking saying now, we know you haven't done it, but you're the only one we can pin on.
Yeah.
You fucking dick, man. You fucking. So I'm now looking at 8 years inside. 2 months later, on March the 26th, I have my daughter. I'm like, I don't want to be a football league no more. I want to be fucking a dad. I want to be there for me kids. So then I jacked in the football league and started working the doors. So I thought, I might as well get paid for it. But my child didn't come till November. November, I can't remember what it was. November, whatever it was. I went to Grimsby Crown Court, had a 4-day trial. It was about 20 minutes before the trial started. He was going to chuck it. Because Carl hadn't turned up, and he turned up. So he went to trial and got found. Kill him with your friend. I'll tell that because I did do the friend. I was fine.
Yeah.
I'm the only one in Crown Court.
Yeah.
There's no Grindel, there's no other Carlisle, just me. What the fuck's that about? So I think if there'd been more lads, I'd have got not guilty all the way. There you go. So I got suspended sentence, banned from. I know he'd done like a ban the year before, banned for fighting at Scunthorpe. So I've done like, so I got another banned from sporting events and fucking all the rest of it. Big fine. Skinning my teeth because I had my daughter, Lauren. Lauren changed me. I haven't Lauren, that changed me. I don't want to be a dad. I don't be banged up. I don't mean fucking. One of them dads is not there, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My dad, I've been that kid.
So how old was, what's the age difference between Lauren and Brogan and Bridie?
Four years. So Lauren's 1990, Brogan's 94, and Bridie's 99.
The Tearaway Podcast. No bullshit. No bollocks. No f***ing idea.
Where did the boxing come in then? How did you mix boxing with the martial arts?
So, across the road from a lad called Carl Jensen, he's a real good boxer, he was. His sisters used to take us to a place down there, Wellington Street, above a carpet place. I was really young there, I was really young. I was called, like, for a run, and it's past me grand's house on there, five ways on Dover Street, Devon Road.
Yeah.
Made house from the bank. So I dabbled them. He moved away, so obviously I couldn't get to Wellington Street, but then I used to go to White Hart from about the age of 12. Dabbled. There wasn't really a lot of interest shown by the coaches, to be honest. Like, and I get it, because like, I've coached boxing since that, obviously in later life. Some kids come, some kids go, so you're not going to put your time and effort in until you know you're on the stage. So I dabbled. I had a fight outside a nightclub in Clee Thorpe called the Winter Gardens. Fags Ball, it was.
Fags Ball, Wednesday night.
Fags Ball. I was underage, it was Christmas Eve, night before Christmas Eve. I was underage, shouldn't have been in there. So I had this big fight kicked off because some lads or some blokes, so I say, I was the youngest one there. So I'm like, not picking myself up, like, I'm more scrapping. I'm holding my own, I'm doing all right. I bit a doorman's finger off and fucking all the rest of it. couple of blokes fucking got the better of me. But I stood my ground, they didn't run off. A couple of those blokes run off. Bear in mind, my 17-year-old boy, I didn't run off. So a guy at the time called Stuart Fleet was opening a boxing club.
I remember Fleet.
He said, listen. Yeah, he said, like, listen, thanks for fucking sticking by me, mate. Because one of his mates ended up in hospital. Thanks for staying by, mate. He said, like, you're only a young lad. I've seen videos you're doing karate. Fancy I'm going to go boxing. I'm like, okay. And that was it. But, like, the difference being between boxing with him and boxing with a white, he's got a white hat. Boxing with a white hat was like, he took time out. He took, like, that was his first ever boxer. So I put the ring up, we were doing footwork together and all the rest of it. And then when we sparred, all the CBP had come down. And he went, there was about 20 lads there. And he did a round with all his lads, one round with each lad. And he battered them over. And they said, he wants to get back in the ring and do another round. I want CBP. I was just like a money kid that moved into town. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do another round here. And I was like, is he fucking right? Yeah. But I knew, like, I'm quite, I would say clever, but I'm like, I've got that psychological stuff. And I'm like, some crazy cunt gets in and does another round, they're going to go, who the fuck's that?
Yeah.
They're going to start asking who you are. Yeah. And remembering, like, that's that fucking nutcase you got in the ring.
Yeah. You know? Reverse psychology. Even if you didn't want to. But at the end of the day, you're going to learn something.
Yeah, and then, do you know what it was? Because you're not fucking, I thought, I've got to be my body. I'm thinking, I'll have you for that cunt. Mm. You're not, I'll have you for that. Knocking fuck out of me. So, and that's why I stuck at it, was that. And it was good.
What do you remember as a child getting up to that people just won't do now? And I'm going to give you a scenario of what I used to do, and that's when the fucking chip van used to come round. We used to sit on the step, or it was like a mobile shop. We all used to sit on the back of the step. It would fuck
it's
off.
Mobile.
Yeah. We used to fall off the back of that, do your knees in and fucking elbows in. But for like three or four of you, just try and sit on the back. Or even when it was snowing, you get on the back of a fucking ice cream van or something like that.
The back of the chip van would be like 12 year on the bumper, wouldn't I? In the back.
Yeah.
Snowing through, bombing along. Yeah, fucking funny.
What
great memories they are.
What memories do you remember from Non-Stop when you was eight?
It's like, here's a funny one. Everybody around the country, probably around the world, would be like, say, can these kids who go garden creeping or scrumping apples?
Scrumping,
right?
Yeah.
So you climb over like four fences, take like a bag full of apples. You imagine now, like, you can't go scrumping. You've got CCTV, you've got sensor lights, you've got this, you've got that. It's crazy, but it's funny, like, we was blessed. I really do think we was blessed to have the memories, like, to go garden creeping or even to, like, go scrumping. You can't go scrumping now. Not a fucking chance.
Nah.
Not a chance. Look at this one, Dave. Knock, door, run.
Yeah.
You can't walk up to a door and have the knock, door, run. As soon as you walk up to
it's
the
assault.
Door.
It's assault.
Not that.
Antisocial behaviour. Yeah.
If you've got a ring door, I've got a ring door, man. So somebody, if you walk up my drive, if you go like walking past my drive, it goes off. Right? So knock, door, run. If somebody runs up and knocks on your door, you don't have to go up and answer the door, do you? You just look on your phone and go, yeah, little bastards and run off.
Yeah.
That's it. Whereas when we were kids, you had to open the door and go, you fuckers, and run off with me.
Halloween, go and get our turnips, cut all your turnips out, triangle eyes, put a fucking candle in. They have proper pumpkins nowadays. We had turnips or Swedes from McNamara's or Harry Wayman's shop. Yeah. Did you used to go to Tiffany's?
What, when we were kids or when we were
No, kids. So we used to go to a disco on a Saturday or
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. And kind of like moving off the Bradley or moving off the Non-Stop, it's always all right whilst you was on your own estate. But the minute you go somewhere else like Tiffany's, that's then when you're meeting other kids, other schools, probably don't know you, bit bigger than you, then you meet the bully.
Yeah.
So did you have any of that when you was away from the Non-Stop?
But at Non-Stop as well, like Paul Oscar, of course, with me, was like one of my biggest nemesis in my life. He's a fucking out and out bully. So when the 18 come out, from the 18, when it first got shown in Britain,
I ain't going on no plane, fool.
Exactly, right, Mr. Ting. So I was reading an article about him, things like some newspaper, back before the summer, like, fucking scumbag bill. So Mr. Ting said, he was never bullied, blah, blah, blah. And just as I call out Mr. T. I remember Saturday morning. So I'm out on the front, Crosby Road, it's about 6 o'clock, whatever. Me and Paul's had a difference over the years, but I'm never going to beat Paul. He's bigger than me, always bigger than me. Fucking like, he's about 2-3 years older than me. I think two, but into weights. He was just an horrible bastard, like.
Mm.
Fucking horrible, fucking, just like, drop them down the drains in the stream. It's like, yeah, just had an evil streak about him. Probably different now. He's probably like a nice man now. What am I about with his kids? So anyway, mass murderer. Yeah. It's probably all right now.
17 dead so far, mate. Yeah, he made a good call with that one.
Be all right by the cunt.
Just say it as it is. It's a lot easier.
Yeah, fucking right. So we're now you're going to fuck up because I've seen him since I've been on the doors and I'm like, I'll fucking rip your fucking throat out, you cunt. So anyway. So these days, I've read this thing about Mr. T, and I was stuck with Gary Bolton, Lee Whately, was outside Paulus's house with me so well, and he's done as usual. He's trying to bully me, and I'm like, okay, like the closest thing I thought, oh, what, fuck this. I've just been reading about Mr. T, how he never got bullied. So I'm like, woof, right hand. And I decked him. So I'm like, buzzing my tits off, right? I decked him. Obviously, he's got back over, right? Because he's 2 years old, and he's going like, you little cunt, kick the shit out of me. So I walked in the house. Mum's in there. I'm like, crying, laughing. She's like, what the fuck's up with you? I went, I've just laid out Paul Oscar. She went, so why are you crying, laughing? Because he beat me up afterwards. Well, since that day, he never bullied me again.
That's it. For fear of being knocked out.
Mind, well, like I said, life comes full circle. So when I was a kid, I used to fight my mum's boyfriends, right? Fucking, and I'm talking, when I spoke, I'm talking about 12-year-old day. I'm talking like, one time, I was 12-year-old. Obviously not going to win. I got my head smashed on the fireplace. I've got a bruise on my head. The front of my forehead, like a round circle. You're not going to win, but you know you're not going to win, but you're still going to have it. And when I say life comes full circles like this, I'm an old man now, fucking granddad and all the rest of it. But I'm not bothered about winning. If the morals are there, and if I will have a fucking scrap, even though I'm not going to win, I'll still just, I'm saying now, I will still have it.
Listen to my voice. I'm here to please your ears.
Maddie, you have lived a fucking life. Let's hang out next time you are in LA. Dino, fucking continue with this legend.
Just going back to childhood again, when everyone was playing football, and obviously everyone wanted to be on Shelley Woodford's side, I supported Liverpool at the time. And then when I became the hooligan, went through the hooligan stage when I was 13, 14 with GHS, I then got kind of like, I became mates with Johnny Burgess, and he supported Chelsea. Trebor supported West Ham. I was Whitehead. Mark Dennis was Man United, Elliot Man United, and like you was Liverpool. Like you stayed Liverpool, didn't you?
Yeah,
you never changed.
The biggest influence there is like, let me tell you something. So also my dad wasn't there, so it was Grimsby Town match. Back then, it was Grimsby Town match on your own. But my uncle Ashley, right? I've got a cousin called Darren Pace. I love that Darren. Love him to bits. Everybody knows him. His dad took me to the first Liverpool match. And then he used to take me to Liverpool matches. And then there was a woman called Anne North. She used to take me to Liverpool matches. But I'd say the biggest influence in my life to being a Liverpool fan was my cousin Darren Pace, because my mum was a Leeds fan, for whatever reason. And my dad, obviously, Glaswegian, he was Celtic. So everybody used to say, like, how can we support Liverpool living in Grimsby? The reason being, my uncle used to take me to matches. And then a woman called Anne North used to take me to matches. But I'd say the biggest influence without a doubt was our Darren and his dad, Ashley. Without a doubt. And I love them both for it.
Yeah.
And like, the funny thing was, when I was about, was it 77, was it 78, when Dalglish went to the left Celtic, went to Liverpool. I was 78, sorry. And my family in Glasgow used to go, you stole Dalglish. I'm like, hang on a minute, I'm a bit of a fucking tea leaf, even that age. When I stole fucking Ken Dalglish, fucking, whether it's 440 grand or whatever, I can't remember what it was. But I used to get so much grief off my cousins in Glasgow. You stole Dalglish. I said, fucking King Kenny. Everybody loves King Kenny. So that's how it was. So like, and I get grief, like, you're a plastic scouting flag. I'm like, yeah, whatever, mate. Say what you fucking want. But if you're a Liverpool fan from the age of seven.
Yeah, different, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah, fucking man, yeah. I've got twin boys, 7-year-old. One supports Liverpool and one supports Man City. Bless my heart, he supports Man City, but I'm all right with that. I'm all right. It's what it is.
You got one out of two. It's not bad. The girls support. Two, yeah. What do the girls support? They must support Liverpool. They've been with you
long enough. They're all Liverpool.
Of course they are.
They're all fucking Liverpool there. Yeah.
There you go. Nothing wrong with that. Listen, one of the features we do on Tearaway Podcast is your last meal. Your last meal is, because you've travelled, you'll understand this and get this. You are being led up to the electric chair where it might work or it might not. Or you might get a lethal, non-lethal injection, so you might be half dead, you might not. But you're going to get your last meal. You're in your cell, your family's all around you. What is your last meal going to be?
Fucking, I've spent a lot of time in the fucking cell, so I should know. Well, I'd say years ago, it used to be cheeseburger and chips, and definitely apple pie and ice cream. Big thing, apple pie and ice cream.
Hot or cold? Like, hang on a minute. Would you have the apple pie hot or cold?
Apple pie's hot, and the ice cream, obviously the ice cream's fucking cold.
You can't have it on cold on a fucking plate. What's wrong with you, heathen?
But then these last fucking, I've gone mad about it. I'm always like chicken and fish. I could wake up shore on them now. So my main meals are always like white meat. I don't do pork. I do like chicken and do fish. So but I think it's still good for cheeseburger and chips. Apple pie and ice cream, and then drink. The drink has to be fucking iron brew.
Ginger.
Iron brew. Made by Gerdes.
Yeah, it pisses me off when people say iron brew. There's no O in it. It's just IRNBRU.
Yeah.
Going back to Tiff's.
Listen, when he got beat down, I'll tell you now, I never fucking did it. fucking been like, I've been accused of a lot of things in my life. Oh, I've been accused of every crime. But as I say, no, I never did tips.
I don't think you did do it, but I think someone associated with you did do it.
Well, I think I know you're on about there. And I think like it, and he's I think I know you're on about, we'll talk about this off the podcast, but I think as well that I think he's done it. If he, same as you, if he didn't do it, he knows you did it as well.
Yeah.
I know you're talking about there.
Yeah.
I know he's talking about.
Yeah. Sounds like sounds like double penetration, but it's not. DP. It's a DP. I'm telling you now. The fucking fat little penguin. We know who did it. It's in the Evening Telegraph as well. Daz Page.
No, I'm thinking somebody else here, by the way. But like,
no, Daz Page.
Oh, you cunt. I'm going to say fucking. He knows. He never did it, but he knows.
He fucking did. Swan Vesters. What do these do? At the back of Tiffany's. Burnt me fucking childhood down the cunt.
He couldn't pinch washing off a fucking washing line, him. I pinch his pingle jumps off his washing line and stretch him to fit me.
Different story now.
Ciao Matty, ricorda, non siamo mai stati fatti per avere successo. Love your books, man. See you in Italy again soon.
What became your employment when you started to grow up a bit?
So like, because my dad wasn't there, I never got like a look at him. Like, I'm like, well, I say what my job is now. I'm a rigging supervisor.
Broke back.
I went offshore. Yeah. Went to advise, but like, when I first started, nobody gave me a looking because my dad wasn't there. And it's like a bit like passed down trades, and you have to know people. And back then, the mentality was like a drinking mentality. Because I didn't have a drinking mentality. I was always training, like boxing or karate. And I was like, very family oriented, like, even though me and Joanne don't talk, she'll say, like, I was always DIY around the house. I want a better life for my kids, obviously. Going back then was all bullies, but I had no money coming in. And you're a father, so you got a supply. You got to feed your child, you got a clover. Don't worry, she always got clothes. She's got the fucking best gear, by the way. She got the best toys.
Yeah, all stolen.
Oh, fucking mine was, yeah, fucking no shit.
Fell off the back of a lorry. You got any, you got any 3 to 6 months stuff on there, brother?
Fucking hell, mate. He's like, hey, so wait, Christian, this is funny as fuck, though. I can't say stuff, I was going to incriminate myself and all the rest of it. But hey, Christian, it was my mum's house in Chateaway, and my family was down from Glasgow. The two lads walked in, looked back at him, about fucking size of him, fucking, it's about 12 by 12. These two lads walking, I don't know, right? Yeah, but we've just done this job. They've got the fucking, honest God, they've got the best gear going, man. Fucking like expensive. Say, like, do you want this, buy this, one, buy that? My cousin's from Glasgow, couldn't believe it. Like, we'll buy this, we'll buy that, man. So because it's Christmas, there's food there, and there's booze. So like, here's the food, here's the booze, give them cigarettes, all the rest of it. Now they're getting pissed. My cousin's now a thieving off the thieves. Say like taking like, oh, let's try on that jumper. They're taking like 3 jumpers. Well, they're getting that pissed and getting sausage rolls and pouring volleyball to whatever. So the thieves got thieved off by my cousins from Glasgow. Fucking best day ever.
What's inspired you to start writing books?
The reason I used to write, I used to do creative writing when I was a kid, and my teacher was Mrs. Webb. I hope she's still alive, to be honest. I don't know if she'll listen to this, but I hope she gets some recognition. So most kids would write in creative writing 2.5 pages, right? We get like 9. Like, up in mind, I'm in an environment, a violent environment. So my getaway from life was to write.
Yeah.
Right? So imagine like a young kid, what's going around you, everybody's fucking scrapping his fucking this going on, that going. You block it out by writing. You never had headphones back then. I mean, my dumbbell, like, not, I haven't got it now. So I'd write, like, say, most kids would write 2.5 pages. That, you have to do a minimum of 2.5 pages. Right? You have to do, like, fucking 7, 9, 10, 12 pages. No problem.
Because that was your escape.
Mrs. Webb, my escape is getting what's going on around me. But I think Mrs. Webb sort of knew that. So she'd always, at the time, was like, what the fuck? And I think about this quite a lot. She'd give me, like, 9.25, 9.5, 9.75, but never give me that 10. That was, like, my fucking name.
Nemesis.
Yeah. Well, like, we fucking hear what's called the Indiana Jones and fucking the Last Crusade, the fucking Golden Set. Whatever you want to call it, it was like, my Golden Goose to get the 10.
Yeah.
I've been writing like fucking 10 pages and like, still getting 9.75 or fucking 9.7. She didn't put 9.78 or something like that. I just think, you cunt, man. For young kids, think you cunt. Danny Chapman the World is my favourite book. And the reason being for that as well, you want your fucking father figure.
Yeah.
Always want your father figure. I remember like, I read a thing a couple of years ago. Be the dad that you always want to be. Just look at me. Be the dad you always want to be. And that's what I wanted back then. Dad Chapman World. Like, if I read the book, it's about him and his dad, isn't it? With the raisins and the fucking pheasants and all the rest of it. So the mind was like from there. So that was that, right? So never bothered. You move on with life. You do karate. You do boxing. And it happened about, what was it, 2002, I think it was, or 2003. I broke my leg playing football. I started writing poems. stuck around his pubs. So when his leg gets better, goes back to work, gets laid off from work. Goes on the computer, like one day, just went on the computer, and I realised I'm about 60 pounds. Now, you know this bucket list you have to have before you're 40, write a book, do a skydive, do this, do that, fucking weather. Silent sleep with a fucking ladyboy. Not joking.
Right. Fuck off, I've seen photos. You told me not to say anything, you bring it up.
Fucking cook a pizza. So I was like 60 pounds, I thought, so what? So I banged out in a rush, I can't remember what age I was, just to get this bucket list done thing done. So I got it published, all this, but I never thought anything of it, and then obviously people like give feedback and stuff like that. But then one day I was out with those lads from a working men's club where I used to play football for one season. They weren't really keen on me, to be honest. I don't know how I'm going to play football with them. But one of the guys in there is like a bit of a geezer. He was walking to some bars and he went, "Hey, I've read your book." I went, "Oh, yeah." And I was expecting to slag me off and he went, "Do you know what?" He said, "I didn't realise you had an hard life." And "What are you on about?" I went, "So that book means like your story, life." I went, "Fucking hell, do you know what?" And the easy one, like I say, been out for 2 years, I thought, "Yeah, it does." Because all I could do was write about what I know.
Yeah.
So then what progressed from there was, and the second one, and then also I did my dormant book.
Hang on. 22 years old. Hang on. So the first book, it was Hooligan Poet, wasn't it?
Hooligan Poet, yeah.
And then the second one is Foo Bar Poetry.
Yeah.
And the third one is One Night on the Door.
One Night on the Door. But since it's obviously give the money to the 11 forces, I'm not giving a fuck about the money. It's more about getting the book out there. But my second book, fucking peanuts. Look, you ain't whatever you ain't, fucking nothing, man. But here's the biggest thing of all. Never mind the money. It's not about the money. This is the biggest, the biggest thing of all, like, the biggest sports of all. The estate next to mine, there was Nunsthorpe, I'm from the Nunsthorpe, there was a Grange, there was St. Michael's. Now, my ex, one of my exes, her sister works at a school in St. Michael's, and the way this guy, he's an ex-Grenadier guy. And he was saying, like, I can't get the kids to write, can't get them to write stories, because it seems like being sissy. So in the staff room, so obviously like some of the people in the staff room, then we went, why don't they get Matthew McCourty? He's from Nunsthorpe, rough background, blah, blah, blah. That's a great idea, will you come and do it? So they messaged me, will you come and do it? I went, I'll come and do it, but I've been in prison since then. I was saying fucking, I protect kids. I pride myself on being like a protector of children. I've taught karate to kids, I've coached boxing to kids, I'm on football teams, all that shit. Well, football teams, more pub teams. So then they went for the CBI, I said, what a problem? Which was good, I was made up with that. So I've now gone to school and I've got these kids who don't want to write fucking stories, and they're my poems, like, even the girls, not just the boys, they're now writing poems and books and stories, and like, so 4 weeks later, I do a competition. So when people say to me, how much money are you? I went, it's not about money. The biggest buzz ever, the biggest buzz is like, I've influenced kids to write fucking stories. To the point where the deputy headmistress at school said that one time on a parents' evening, the teachers went, the parents said to me, I don't know if it's Matthew McCoy's, but like, I need to thank him because he saved my daughter's life around.
And that's the amazing thing about writing, is you touch people's lives in a way that nobody will ever get unless they've written a book that is inspiring. Yeah. And like, your books are inspiring, which is what inspired it for me, because you asked me to write a couple of chapters for a book you was going to write. And I thought, fucking hell, if I could do a couple of chapters for you, why don't I do a couple of chapters for me? And that was the inspiration from you handing that to me and giving me that responsibility of writing something for you. And then I just thought, fuck it, that's what I need to do. So I've been in that boat with you, and it's a fucking amazing feeling to know you've inspired kids.
Yeah, fucking brilliant, mate. Wow, that 100%. So you know Pulp Fiction? Yeah. Well, before Pulp Fiction was Reservoir Dogs, Quentin Tarantino did films his way. When he did his films, it wasn't the norm. He did them like, well, just did them his way, did it?
Yeah.
Right, and after that, loads of fucking directors or filmmakers started doing films his way. Now, if he'd have been, say, carrying in the same mode as everybody else, Quentin Tarantino would be just like a normal fucking other guy, fucking whatever.
Yeah.
But Quentin Tarantino was Quentin Tarantino because he did films his way, fucking inspired people to do films, like, back to front. The story's always back to front on that.
Yeah.
Like the same goes, like he says, Pulp Fiction. So when I was said, like, do you want to come? I went, no, I'll do it my way, because, like, and that's the reason. Hey, it might take off, it might not, but at the end of the day, I've done it my way. I ain't fucking following everybody else in the show. I've been a sheep.
You've been the shepherd, right, leading the flock.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fucking yeah.
At the end of the day, that's what makes the book Matty McCourt. You're not following the sheep. You're not doing it in a way that everyone else. It's not a mainstream way. It's different, completely unique in the way you've done the poetry.
It's the same as Dorman book, right? How many Dorman books have we made? Like, when guys go like, I'm hard as fuck, kick the fuck out of the court, fill everybody in, like, fucking blah, 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 fucking hard as nails, nobody messes me, fucking blah, blah. So I did my Dorman book. My thing was like, different. I'm not going to do a Dorman book about violence. People's bored of violence. Violence is fucking boring. Nobody wins a fight. Somebody goes to hospital, somebody goes to prison. Nobody wins a fight. So I'm a boat down, boys. Always going to be funny stories. Do your own thing, your own way.
Have you had the kids watch Champ yet?
I've actually, yeah, fucking up, yeah.
Did you start crying when he died?
I fucking died, damn it. You know what?
I can't
believe you just fucking said that. I watched that about 4 weeks ago. Fucking just out of the put on. Fucking kills me.
Yeah.
Kills me, Tom. I'm one of them guys. When it's on, if I'm in company, I have to go out and do a cup of tea the last 2 minutes. Right?
I know what's coming. Last snows of spring, Champ. Fucking up.
You won't catch me crying. I'm a fucking geezer.
Yeah. Fucking crying your tea, it's a bit salty.
Well, yeah, do you know what, Dean? Do you know what, mate? Do you know what, mate? Fucking, can't believe you said that to me. Fuck me. What makes it worse, like, because I've got two young boys now, seven. Is that, you know, like, just like, because he's an alky, and he's like, I'm not saying I'm alky, but like, I like a drink, but the boy's just like, he loves his, oh, I love my daughter, obviously, I love my fucking daughters, I love my daughters a bit. I can't believe you just fucking said that to me. That's funny, that. It's funny.
What the social media shit? Find us on Twitter and TikTok at The Tearaway Podcast or on Facebook group page The Tearaway.
You've travelled extensively, lived in Grimsby pretty much 99% of your life, apart from when you're obviously offshore and when you're away. But you travel extensively, so your mind and your brain, like when I say to people, open your mind to other possibilities, people can't. They've got a closed mind. My dad, when I told him I was going to live in London, disowned me. Didn't want anything to do with me. Took 3 or 4 years for him to come round. But because I was leaving Grimsby, he thought I felt that I was better than all the rest. Now, I left Grimsby when I was 21, I think. I think I just got raped at 20. Tried to commit suicide, got sectioned. Got through all that and then left to go and live in France. Best thing I ever did was to get out and broaden my mind. And you've done that. You've been to so many places you've been. I mean, we've just come back from Italy. But one of the achievements you did for, was it your 50th with the penguin, Paging, your cousin, was to do Everest. Another bucket list for the two of you.
Yeah, but before Everest, mate, I've done like, South Africa, like today, absolutely terrible top mountain. Also went to Robben Island, fucking. And I'm a big believer, like, also my family's Irish, right? Well, my dad's side. So I'm a big believer that all men are born equal. So, like, yeah, so I've never looked down on people in my life, but I've never looked up to people, just how I am. So, like, Everest was great. I didn't want to do Everest, to be honest. My cousin called me into it, I'd have it. But we did it, like, the lads we travelled with, the lads was like, fucking brilliant. So we did that, and after that, I got the book. So since then, I've done the three peaks, I've done the 24-hour. Nevis, Scaffold Pike in Snowdon, and I've done the Machu Picchu, and a month tour in South America, the Machu Picchu, which only live here. Argentina, finished off in Brazil for the Rio Carnival. That's a fucking experience and a half, that. That's the bollocks, that is. I've seen good and bad all around the world, and I big believe there is good and bad in every race and religion. Without a doubt, I've seen it. People have to tell me that, I've seen it, I've travelled the world. The only place I've been, it's on my bucket list, which I will be this year, is Australia. That's it. But apart from that, I've done all of America. I've done like Route 66, New York, numerous times. Done this Pacific Highway.
Alcatraz.
I was in Chicago, so we've done like, I'll tell you one of the best places I've been. I was on about last night. It was Bill Street, Memphis is fucking unbelievable, mate. Unbelievable fucking music. I've got a broad mind, and I've never looked down on anybody. I've never looked up to anybody, and I will help anybody out in life. I will do, yeah, without a doubt. But at the same time, to flip side to that, you fucking cross me on my family, fucking.
Look out. What have you never told anyone that you can say now?
Fuck me. I'm laughing. Probably that. There's things I'll have said to the grave without a doubt. That's not me trying to, like, fucking be a big bollocks and a gangster and all that. But, like, there is things like, I've been accused of, and like, I will never, not a fucking chance, Dean. You know what I'm fucking talking about there. Not a chance.
Have you shagged any of your mates' mums?
Fucking, where's that come from? You can't say that, cunt.
Of course you can.
Well, never fuck, I don't think so anyway.
What has been your biggest achievement to date from your perspective? What is the thing that you look back on and go, fuck me, I am proud that I've done that?
Kids.
Second, kids will always come first. I want about your achievement. Like Nevis is a fucking great one.
I'll tell you now, without a doubt. My dad probably beats the team, like, never been a bully. Like, I worked the doors for 22 years and had a good name for not being a bully. So that's probably, like, big achievement. And people just say that. He's never a bully. He's, like, he's a good guy. Fucking real good guy. So that's one of them. And probably the other one's, like, him. And I've just been a nice person, really. I know it's all cliche now, but
despite everything you've been through, the fact that you remain a nice person.
Yeah, the people say that and they're like, fucking hell, right? I won't put a smoke up my own ass. Yeah, fucking people who say he's a nice person does everything to help everybody out. Yeah, I've lost jobs, mate, offshore, helping guys out. Fucking, I can say it now because it don't matter, because I've been sat filling hours, giving the working man like extra hours on his
Hang on. Just fucking slow down, soldier, right? You fucking got done for rain tax.
Hello, yeah, fucking did you? Fucking
rain tax. Explain where fucking rain tax came from.
So I was on a rig in the North Sea, so like, I'm not really feeling now. I'm like giving it to lad. So like, I'm just booking hours. Let the working class lad have some. So like, these lads are from like wherever, Middlesbrough, Newcastle, fucking Birmingham. So I'm like, 2 hours a day on the timesheet. I'm in the office like 2 hours for them. 4 hours, I can justify my hours, 4 hours, because I'm doing like timesheets and working beyond the fucking college of reefer. So about five ships in, I get called in the office, like it's an email. He needs to come and see his Aberdeen. Gets the train up there. He needs to justify these hours. I'm like, okay. So like, your hours are okay. 4 hours because you just say like, you're doing office work, aren't you?
Yeah.
What about these lads? Like, what about these lads here? Fucking tell. There's about eight lads who was working under me. They're not on my day shift. So, well, so I come up like, well, wait till the rain that day. I went, what do you mean you wait till the rain? You're in the middle of the fucking North Sea, and all the rain you got wake in the fucking rain. And I come like, from there, I sort of get the, I don't give two fucks. I got the giggles, and I went, well, here's what it is. So they don't sat here because, like, obviously they put a bill into this old company and blah, blah. So you have to, like, go round the houses and go, like, well, yeah, we've got no more work for you. This and that, and I'm like, well, I'll be blacklisted. And I go, no, we don't have blacklists. Obviously, the fucking do, we're like, it's got different names now. See, I got the sack for like filling the hours, but like, look after the working man.
Tell me something that no one knows, no one else will know.
No one else will know. I'm doing anything, mate. I really can't.
Right,
I'm
okay.
I'm open book, mate. I say things out of the heart. So I show my feelings, wear my heart on my sleeve, as I like to say. And that's it. And if there is something like, there's been a couple of things I've been accused of in the past, like, there's not a fucking chance I'm ever going to say anything like that. I'm not a fucking chance, mate. So, like, yeah, no, there's nothing.
Cool. Right. Thank you for doing that, Matty. I will speak to you in due course. He's Matty McCourt. I'm Dean Williams. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Tearaway podcast.
Yeah.
See you later.
Love you, brother.
This episode of the Tearaway podcast has just ended. But we know you'll be back to listen to more conversations between Dino or Doris and Dino. So make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any episode. Thank you for listening.